You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
This is going to be fun.
So we're just doing audio there, right?
Yeah, we're just doing audio.
I got you, man.
I just want to look at your clean-shaven face. God, that's horrifying. You're like a thumb.
I give up.
We're going to go ahead and just start. We're just going to go ahead and start from there. Chris, we've got an election coming up, and as people are telling me what to care about and what to freak out about and what to do about it, I seem to be ignoring all of them. And as I keep seeing the ads coming in, as I keep hearing people bitch and complain on Facebook, I kind of miss being involved politically, but I don't. But what I've really been thinking about recently, which is why I wanted to get together as an excuse to not only catch up with you, but to also get some content out, is I miss doing awesome, fun shit with you and the others back in Virginia. Now, life has obviously changed quite a bit since the lockdowns, but we're going to go back to a little bit of the Chris Sanders origin story, because I want to go ahead and introduce people to the John Wick of politics. Because when I tell people I really don't give a fuck about certain politicians or certain races or what so-and-so is promising me, because I'm just going one-man army at this point, I try and remember the rules and the lessons and the shit I learned from you back in Virginia. So let's go ahead and start with this.
Wow, that's a huge buildup. I hope I can meet the expectations.
Don't disappoint anyone, or else everything is just going to be fucked from here. But
we might be in trouble.
So I've met far too many people who call themselves political consultants or political operatives. On LinkedIn, 9 times out of 10, that mostly just means unemployed. But for you, one of the first things that made you stand out when we met back in like 2017 was you're the only person I ever knew that had a wall of politicians that you've taken out. And I feel like that's the only place to start, because that sets the tone for everything.
Well, you know how in the old West, they used to display the pelts of the predators that they killed on their farms as a sign, as a warning for other predators. And that's what, you know, that's what I believe in. Politicians tend to be herd animals. It's really simple. I believe in non-compromise confrontational tactics. That's it. And you have to follow through with that. In other words, like when I'm working on an issue, let's say in Richmond or Charleston or Baton Rouge or wherever it may be, where I'm involved on an issue fight, you know, I tell politicians simply this: I'm here to take one or two things. I don't care which, but it's your choice what you give me. You're either going to give me your vote and support me on this issue, or you're going to give me your seat. I don't care which, it's your decision. But then you have to follow up with it. right? I mean, you know, too often, you know, during the legislative session, which is when politicians do bad things to us, they hear advocacy groups yelling at them, you know, demanding they vote a certain way and everything else. But then come election season, they look around and nobody's politically dead. And they think all of the activist groups, especially those of us on the Liberty Front or the pro-Constitution front, are just shooting blanks. So we have to take pelts. And I don't care if it's in the primary or general election. I really don't care. If somebody works against me on an issue, I'm coming after them. And I don't care how long it takes. One day, I will make them pay for what they did to me.
I was at dinner recently. Since I moved here to Wisconsin, I've been trying to go with, as listeners will know, the Wolf of Wisconsin route, which is I'm not even registered to vote here. Like, that actually pisses some people off. They're like, it's your duty. And I'm like, fuck off. But like, I'm not even registered to vote here. I've just been cutting checks and collecting phone numbers. And if I have a problem, I deal with it. But I was at a very elitist dinner, and I don't, you know, gloss over the fact that I was not one of the people they expected to be there. I bought a very expensive table and everyone just kind of looked at me. And it was in that moment where I realized, like, I've gotten into the heart of the beast, so to speak, because mm-hmm. a lot of people think that when it comes to elections, when it comes to a lot of the stuff that we look at when it comes to politics, if we bitch about things on social media enough, if we go ahead and just bug our friends, we can go ahead and manipulate a lot of people to vote a certain way. But the truth mm-hmm. is, you know, the number of politicians there, the number of old money that was there, it reminded me of the fact that, you know, they don't listen to us. They listen to the vested powers. And it's not until we actually show them that we're willing to use political force to get what we want, even if it means it's at the expense of their professional capacity in politics, they don't care.
Right. Exactly. I mean, unless you are politically feared, you'll never be respected. Unless you're going to stand between them and their elected crown, you know, their gold badge of all knowledge that they wear about, like it's some sort of medal. Unless you are a danger to them retaining their power over the people, they don't care. Too many activists fall for the access route. And access is simply they're friends with politicians. They talk to politicians. They call politicians them. Politicians listen to them. They're friends. But you have friends to help you out when you do something wrong. If you're really doing your job as a grassroots activist, your job is to tell the politician what the people require. But if you become one of these access-based critters, you end up becoming just a lapdog telling the people what they have to accept from the political class. And that's what we do too often on our side. The Tea Party is a good example of that. They started off being a really powerful force, and then they became just another wing of the Republican Party, and nobody gives a shit about them anymore. It really is that simple. Because they became, you know, they got neat profile pictures on Facebook. They got invited to all these dinners. I mean, I like going to big dinners. I like putting on black tie and showing up at some of the Republican Party events in Virginia. It's kind of like the turd just showed up in the punch bowl, because I guarantee you there's three or four people there that I've ripped out of office because they had it coming, as my granddaddy would say. It's fun. And they can't stand that you enter into their circle. But I don't spend my life hobnobbing with them. I just basically tell them what we expect, what we want, and if they don't play along, we make their life a living hell. We may not take them out of office the first couple times, you know, Eric Cantor, but we will eventually get you, right? And a lot of politicians, I'm sorry, are political zombies. They're dead. They just don't know it because they've never had anybody with any skill come after them. And that's what makes it so much fun. Is they're stunned that somebody's actually going to try to, you know, take away what they view as their gift from the Lady of the Lake holding Excalibur and presenting it to them to rule over us. It's hilarious.
And that's why I keep having to tell myself, because when I was working in and out of DC, I loved getting invited to the events. It made me feel like I mattered, especially as a young person. Like, I actually felt like, oh, I'm noticed. I'm important. Maybe they'll do something important with me. Mm-hmm. Post 2020, I mean, with the lockdowns and everything, what we saw was the most egregious act against civil liberties in the United States history in modern times, at least. And what I had to gather from this is, like, you know, I'm looking around at this venue I was at, and I'm like, half these people supported the lockdowns and still don't see a problem with it. And more than half of them supported mandatory masking and vaccine mandates and closing schools and closing businesses, because they could go wherever they wanted. They had the access to, get preferential treatment. And if, you know, a bunch of businesses went out of business, they just went ahead and bought up a bunch of more assets. They didn't hurt. And I have to remind myself, it's like, I'm not one of these people. Like, they will destroy my life, and they won't even take the time to learn my name.
Right. What they were trying to do is smooth you with access. They wanted to give you a little bit, make you feel a little bit important. Like, hey, you know, come join us. Be one of us. We will come down from our lofty stage and speak with you. Right. And they do this to so many activists and so many young people that they, you know, people forget the power they actually have over politicians, because most contested races are won or lost by about 3% of the population in one vote. As a good friend of mine, Kirk Shelley, likes to say, small hinges move big doors. If you can build your list big enough, if you can create a following of 3%, I don't care if it's 3% of a school board race, that's not many people, right? If it's 3% of a Congress critter race, that's a lot bigger. But like in Virginia, we've built a list of well over 500,000 Virginians that we can, in a touch of a button, I can, you know, put out there what the current politician is doing and light them up like a Christmas tree. Because, you know, it's very expensive to take them out of office. It's easier to change their vote by, you know, changing the environment in which they exist. If they're being hunted everywhere they go by people screaming at them about what they did wrong, you can mostly change their behavior. But if not, hey, you know, we'll take you out too, or we'll try like hell. Because most politicians, especially at the state level, which is really where you get things done, the federal level, not much can happen there, but at the state level is where you can get things done. They have other jobs. They'd rather work, play golf, take their family on vacation, do most anything rather than face angry voters in a re-election race. So if you can create the thing they fear the most is demonstrable proof of large numbers of angry voters, you create enough angry voters, they will start to listen to you. I've even moved Democrats of all crazy things on gun bills. So, you know, to get them to vote the right way. Lee Carter, who is a self-avowed socialist, he was in the 50th district of Virginia.
I miss the drama.
He was terrified by us. He voted right on every gun bill because we were in his district raising more hell than a pet monkey. So, I mean, you can move these people. Don't think. But the biggest danger we face, it's like it says in the Bible, you know, even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light, are the backstabbing rhinos we have within the Republican Party. I get tired of people telling me you need to just focus on the Democrats. Well, I'm sorry, when I'm being, you know, kneecapped by the Republicans on every piece of legislature I'm working on, of course, 3/4 of the pelts on my wall are going to be ex-Republicans I've taken out of office. And that really freaks people out. In 2019, I took 3 Republicans out in general elections. And people were freaked by that. You're like, you let the socialists win? I'm like, no. These people tried to put in red flag gun confiscation laws. Now the Republican Party in Virginia is on notice that if they try to do something stupid and violate nearly half of the Bill of Rights, we're coming after them. So then fast forward to 2022, when our repeal of red flag bill hit the floor in the House of Delegates, even Republicans who at one point had supported red flag immediately voted for our repeal because they were terrified that we'd come after them again. That's how you get things done.
You neutered a man in front of his whole church congregation in 2018.
That was Emmett Hanger. Yeah, he had it coming.
That was so funny. Basically, Emmett Hanger was in a primary race, and what you did was you found out where he went to church. And what did you – it wasn't photos of like aborted fetuses. It was something else. It was photos of aborted fetuses. Okay, that was it.
He claimed to be a Republican, and he was he voted to expand Obamacare and fund Planned Parenthood to kill babies. And so we went to his church on Sunday morning and handed out flyers to all the parishioners going in. And it was a small church, so they all knew him, right? And he lost his mind. He filed an ethics complaint against us in Richmond, which then I sent an email out to a couple hundred thousand of my closest friends in Virginia saying, hey, Emmett Hanger hates the fact we exposed the fact that he, you know, funded, used public dollars to fund baby killers. I've got to go to Richmond. Why don't you call Emmett Hanger and tell him what you think about him filing an ethics case against us? I went down, won the ethics case, because of course we were right. Facts were on our side. He did do this, and it was a public street where we were handing things out, which we were allowed to. And so on the way back, I'm typing up an email that says, oh, by the way, you know, we won the ethics case because we were right. And here's Emmett Hanger's cell phone number. Call him up and tell him what you think about him, you know, filing ethics charges against us for shining the light on the cockroach that is Emmett Hanger. That was a lot of fun. You know, whenever he, some politicians, normally they file an ethics case and activists get all upset and they duck and they cover and they run. Not me. I'm gonna use it as an excuse to keep hitting them again and again and again on that issue.
What does it mean when you get criticized by conservatives? Because far too often, I remember, especially if like Virginia constitutional conservatives, the common criticism was, well, you're using leftist tactics. Well, you're being rude about it. And it's like, you know, back then, that wasn't necessarily anything that was out of acceptable territory. And especially now in the post-2020 world, that's just called a typical Tuesday with friends.
Right. You know, tactics are neutral. Because politics is warfare. Your life, liberty, and property are always at risk with a slightly smaller body count unless the Clintons are involved.
Big body count when they're involved.
That's a big body count. But the thing is, you know, these people sit in front of a red or green button every single day almost and decide whether your liberty or your property is restored or taken. Right. And the left has become really good at confrontational politics to the point that Republicans run to do whatever, like Jill Vogel or Emmett Hanger or Donovan. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them in Virginia that just flee over, you know, Kirk Cox was a great one. OK, you know, they flee to the leftists because they're terrified of what they're going to do because, you know, unfortunately, conservatives hop on the back of the Republican bus. And nobody cares about it because, you know, up until Reagan was elected, 34% of evangelicals were Democrats, 34% were Republican, and 34% or 30 couple percentile were swing voters. People cared about what they thought. Then when Jerry Falwell had the new religious right and created that movement, now 85% of evangelicals just pull the R lever. Guess what? Republicans don't care what evangelicals think anymore because they have you locked up in their voting bank. You are no longer a danger to them. They don't care. So again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning. Unless they are terrified that you are going to work to make sure they lose their next election, they don't care what you think. They're too busy running over to the left. But again, tactics are neutral. I mean, if the enemy is attacking you with tanks, you're not going to hop on your horse with a lance. That's stupid. You know, politics is purely the adjudication of power, and real political power is forcing politicians to act the way you want them to or removing them. And that's something our side needs to get through their thick skulls.
Have you found that over the last couple of years, people who might not have been on board with how you do your activism and everything, they've become more receptive? Or are they still trying absolutely to pretend that we're in like pre-pandemic politics?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the direction everything's moving, you know, rhino hunting is becoming a lot easier than it used to be, especially, you know, with the recent overturning of Roe versus Wade, which, you know, 10th Amendment matters again, us now back to the stage, which is where it belongs. So now it's becoming, people are starting to accept it because the issues they're fighting over, because you know, since 1973, it was always safe for a Republican to run and say they were, oh, we're pro-life. We're just pro-life, but we can't do anything about it, but I'm pro-life. But now it's when the rubber's meeting the road, when it's now time for them to do something, you talk about scattering. It's crazy. So I'm having a lot of fun working on a lot of life issues right now throughout the Republic. And it's people are stunned. They're going, oh my, all, these Republicans claim to be pro-life, but they voted against. Yeah, because they claim to be, because that's what the lie they needed to say to be elected. So I think people are starting to wake up to the lies. And not even, not to mention that, but I mean, even in Virginia, you had Youngkin, you know, supporting lockdowns and jabbing and everything else. And the whole world in Virginia, you know, which changed dramatically from the Northam years, not policy-wise. The policies are pretty much the same as when Northam was there. It's just everybody thinks their great savior has arrived in Youngkin. And I'm sorry, he's done nothing.
The only thing I could say guaranteed him that victory last year was that he switched his entire campaign to focus on CRT. And I had a lot of people make fun of me. They're like, Remso, as soon as you move out of Virginia, Virginia goes red. And I'm like, if you think that you're safe right now, that's not a guarantee.
No,
that's not.
No, it's not. In fact, you know, a lot of he basically won because of Loudoun County schools, and I was having fun in that fight too. But we've started.
I'm gonna pause you there. I'm sitting in my boxers, eating a fucking bag of Doritos, and I'm watching Tucker Carlson, which I rarely do. And I see your face on there, like you weren't yelling. You were very polite. You were just reading off some notes that you had, calling out these school board members. And I'm like, holy shit. He's everywhere. He's infected the Matrix.
I'm like Santa Claus. I'm everywhere. I really didn't know that was going to happen because, you know, I stay away from mostly from media interviews. I really don't like talking to the media because they're really not our friends if you're really doing your job. But
that happened to me when I was at the Washington Times. I'm going over one of our editorials. The next thing I see, they quote you. And I'm like, oh, Chris totally had a hand in this. He called somebody. He knows somebody. I take a photo of him. Like, you're on the front page. And you're like, oh, well, that's nice. What do you mean that's nice? Oh, now tomorrow.
Oh, my God. It's crazy. I mean, the thing is, you know, getting back to Youngkin, we're kind of sidetracked there, but
I'm
really not about, I mean, it's not about me or my ego. It's about the principles. It's about the principles of liberty. It's the fact that, you know, our rights are given by God and government's just taking them away everywhere. My daughter, who's 21, doesn't have the same rights that I had at 21, and certainly not those that my grandfather had when he was floating around the ship in the Pacific fighting the Japanese. Okay, I'm sorry. We need to get these rights back. And, you know, it's individual liberty means personal responsibility of that liberty. And that's what really got me involved in, and Dr. Paul, of course. But Youngkin ran on school choice. He ran on giving back parental choice, right? He actually said the word school choice. So we put in school choice legislation. The entire Republican establishment shot it down. They wouldn't even let it up for a vote. So guess what? We're going back with it. And by the way, we've got a bill champion now who will actually force them to vote on it. And if they vote wrong, again, I don't care if I have to take them out in the primary or the general, I'm coming for them. That's the way it works. Okay? They have to know that the price for bad legislative behavior could be the loss of their seats. But again, Youngkin's ran on school choice, gets elected, and talks about government-controlled charter schools. That's not school choice. School choice means it's your kids, it's your money, you decide where they go and you decide what your money funds with no government strings attached, you know? It's kind of ironic. And now, of course, he's flying around running for vice president, bless his heart. So
when did the wall begin, Chris? What made you what you are?
Oh, wow. Way back when the earth was flat and young, a good
dinosaurs
friend
roamed, roamed and there was cocaine and Coca-Cola.
And you know, you had the Pepsi Coca-Cola wars, and you know, back when I didn't have to use Just for Men on my beard. This guy, a good friend of mine, Dave Pridgen, called me up one day and said, "Hey, Chris, you know, you're kind of, you know, in the politics, you believe in the Constitution as written. Have you ever looked at this Dr. Paul guy, Dr. Ron Paul? And no, he goes, well, why don't you come down and come to a rally? I'll get you in. You'll get to meet Dr. Paul, so on and so forth. I'm like, okay. I showed up. That was back in 2008, right? I show up.
The before times.
Yeah. This is way, way back. And I meet Dr. Paul. All of a sudden, you know, it's like the light bulb clicked, okay? Before I was a Republican, oh, yeah, I'm just a Republican. I'm supporting gun rights because I'm a gun guy and I believe in life and lower taxes and more freedom. But I didn't really get it. I didn't really understand what it meant to be properly woke, not this crazy crap that they're talking about today with the wokesters, but, you know, to understand really what's going on in our political system and how much both wings of the bird, both the Republican and the Democratic parties, are destroying it. And so I got involved. Then this gentleman by the name of Mike Rothfeld had a training, and I went to his training and I sat down, and 8 hours later, my brain was scrambled because I finally, like the light bulb went off. I understand what it means to be an activist now, which, by the way, crazy of crazy, I'm now an instructor for the Foundation for Applied Conservative Leadership, teaching the same class that Mike taught me back then. So I travel around the country teaching the real nature of politics, outside operations, how to make a difference, how ordinary men and women can change history if they stand up against the politicians, the talking heads, and the media, and perhaps save our republic.
How does it feel looking at the past couple of years alone? I mean, with everything that's happened, we had the lockdowns, we had everything happen, but at the same time, we're overturning Roe v. Wade. We're dealing with people that want to go ahead and keep us all on a vaccine registry, but at the same time, now more people have access to concealed carry weapons. It's like things have gotten really freaking crazy, but we've also had some giant victories that can't be overlooked.
Oh, absolutely. People say you can't get things done. You can get things done at the state level. Like, you know, many years ago, again, when the earth was flat, there were three states that had constitutional carry. Now there's 25. Constitutional carry, of course, meaning you don't have to beg the government's permission, pay a tax, and go on a list to bear arms as the Second Amendment intended. At the same time, you have everybody, including like Hogan and other Rhino Republican governors, locking everybody down, violating the Constitution. Because the governors, if you look at each one of these individual states, the governor is supposed to only, you know, they have short-term emergency powers, but the legislature is supposed to vote on them. But they never brought the legislature together. They just did it. They just assumed this power, and people just lined up to get on the boxcars. And because they scared people, oh, you're going to die. Oh, this is so scary. You know, it blew my mind because I'm sitting here when this all broke out, and I'm thinking, you know, during the American Revolution, right at the height of the revolution, we had one of the largest outbreaks of smallpox. Nobody stopped and hid in their homes. And smallpox, by the way, has a really high fatality rate. You don't have a survival rate of 99.999 or whatever percentage rate, you know, but they stayed out. They kept fighting. But now apparently people have just become so afraid and so motivated by fear that it just chased them into their homes, and they were willing to accept whatever, you know, the government demanded of them. I knew people that were in New York City that were locked in their apartment for weeks on end. I'm like, why are you putting up with this? I mean, they tried that where I live. You know, we burned place down. We're not going to tolerate that. But, you know, people just tolerate way too much. They shut down your businesses, told you you couldn't go to church. I mean, come on. You know, it's like Ron said a long time ago, you know, liberty is not maintained by subservient societies. You know, when people start accepting lockdowns, you know, mandatory curfews, forced injections, you're going to lose all liberty. You've got to stop that. You've got to fight. You've got to get in the fight. And I think we're starting to slowly turn the curve or turn the bend where people are realizing this. They think, you know, well, you know, whoever's president is going to save us. That's not true. You know, even if, you know, I hate to tell people this, but even if Ron Paul had won the 2012 election, we still probably have a good many messes today, because again, it boils down to individuals. You know, it's your duty to defend these rights. Not if not for yourself, if not for your children, then for the God who gave you these rights to begin with. You know, we've got to get in and we got to fight. And too many people still like, you know, well, I'm going to my kid's soccer game, or, you know, I just watch the news, whatever CNN or Fox News or whatever they tell me, that's what I'm going to believe. And they don't actually open their eyes and see what's going on. If you look at our society today, we are so subservient to control. Everything we do, from what commode we can have in our house to what light bulb we can have, and we're taxed. Good God. I mean, we rebelled against Great Britain over a 2% tax on tea. But right now, you know, an average American spends more on government than they do on housing, clothing, and food combined. It's ridiculous. We need a real revolution of the people, a political revolution, preferably. And we need to take back our country.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last couple of years, it was like we were a beach and we were constantly getting hit by these giant waves. But now, especially as we're about to hit the midterms, it's like now the tide has gotten a little bit lower and it's seeded. Now you can see who was in the water naked the entire time. I had somebody
it's scary sometimes. I mean, you don't want to see me naked in the water.
Yeah, I mean, I had somebody try and get a large check out of me, and this was for an organization that. I otherwise would have supported, but things have changed. And I basically said, no, you guys were not firmly against the lockdowns enough. You were like 50-50 on vaccine mandates. And I don't forget that. And, yeah. You know, I have a liberal business partner. I'll be honest about that. I've got a liberal mm-hmm. business partner here in Milwaukee who during the lockdowns kept the business open, kept mm-hmm. the employees on payroll, even when he couldn't take a paycheck, and kept trying to get customers engaged and active, despite what the local government was saying. And it's like, mm-hmm. when I have a liberal who's going against that, and he has a business, versus a think tank advocacy group nonprofit who really doesn't have to risk much other than preaching to the choir, that shows me who my allies are. And it's like Cato Institute. The fact that you've got the Cato Institute, who was for the vaccine mandates because it was blockchain, because apparently if everything is blockchain, somehow it's virtuous. They were just going for softcore porn tyranny. They kept trying to convince everyone to get the vaccines when they were sending their people on MSNBC. And now you have a bunch of Cato scholars who are going after Ron DeSantis. Oh, he's a human trafficker. Oh, he's just doing this for show. It's like, you sons of bitches. How can you look at the last couple of years and think that just another white paper is going to change things? If no one had their mind changed, if nobody changed as an individual for the better after the last couple of years, nothing is going to convince them otherwise.
Can I say just how ridiculous it is? Like, groups like the Cato, they put out their white papers. They think they can educate the way out of tyranny. Back to what you started talking about, it's no longer Republican versus Democrat. It's liberty versus tyranny, period. Okay. And when the boot is on your throat, you don't care if it's a right boot or a left boot, there's a boot on your throat. And, you know, the leftists have become very, very good at they've basically taken over the Democratic Party. And now you have, you know, everybody from, you know, the Green New Deal, where we're not supposed to eat hamburgers or something because California.
We're going to eat bugs, live in a pod, yeah. We're not going to own anything, and we're totally going to be cool with it.
Yeah, and everybody's going to be cool with that, and that's much more Democratic mainstream than they want to admit, right? But they've taken over the Democratic Party. It's time for us to take over our party, because really, you know, it's funny. A lot of people get upset, and they talk about running third party, and I'm like, how about we have two political parties to start off with first, okay? That's what we need to do, is have two to start off with that offer real differences, not different flavors of tyranny. Okay. And that's what we get a lot. You know, Cato, you know, bless their hearts. They think they're doing something, you know. What I hate is like groups like that, or even the NRA, which I call Negotiating Rights Away, who take good people's money, people who want freedom and liberty, they want the Second Amendment restored, and they sell out. Right? They become part of the machine so that, you know, their directors can get another pair of Gucci loafers. Every time I've worked on constitutional carry in the state, a tactical enemy's been the NRA because they don't want to win fights. They want the fights to last forever so they can keep, you know, bankrolling their organization over. I'm sorry, it's the truth. And you ought to see gunnies, their heads explode when you explain what the NRA actually does. I remember fighting for constitutional carry in West Virginia. And early on, the NRA was actually working the floor, telling reps not to vote for constitutional carry. And I found that quietly behind the doors, they had said they hadn't fundraised enough off the issue yet. Okay. But we have, it isn't really liberal, conservative so much anymore. It's just straight up liberty, tyranny. That's it. And people need to see it that way. You know, it's funny. You have a Republican president and you have a really crappy foreign policy. You have a Democratic president who campaigns on doing something different, but they have the same foreign policy, right? You know, sometimes no matter which quote unquote party's in charge, the big issues, whether it's, you know, our foreign policy or the Federal Reserve, which people are suddenly waking up to again because of the inflation caused by printing money out of thin air. But the thing is, people are waking up that, you know, nothing really changes. It's just like West Virginia went from being a Democratic stronghold for 83 years. Republicans take over. And if it wouldn't have been for groups like Campaign for Liberty, the National Association for Gun Rights, Right to Work, and a few others using the exact tactics we're talking about today, nothing would be different in West Virginia. But we're hated by the Republican establishment because we forced them. Just like, you know, recently they put forward and was just signed by the governor, the Life at Conception bill. Okay, I don't know if you were watching that fight or not, but we were fighting to make that the strongest life at conception bill in the nation because the West Virginia State Constitution actually prohibits all abortion. And any exceptions they put in it was actually allowing more abortions in West Virginia. But it wasn't the Democrats that were the problem. It was the establishment Republicans who fought and tried to water it down and water it down and water it down. Finally, we got an okay bill passed. I still don't agree with the bill. I don't think it would, you know, is what it should be. But the leftists are raising Cain, but I'm sorry. They weren't the ones that caused the problems. The problem was within the Republican Party.
Where's the next fight going to be? Because right now, everyone is just looking at 2022. And frankly, I even after the last 2 years, I think that Republicans in the Senate are largely controlled opposition. And the ones in Congress have not earned any right to say that they would govern better than the Democrats. They passed all the stimulus spending. They were mum when it came to the lockdowns. When everyone was taking our rights away, they were just like, this is going to be temporary. You know, we're in charge. We have the keys. And then they lost the keys. And now they act like we've got, like, you know, freaking dementia and that things are going to get better. They don't deserve it. They don't deserve it.
The vast number do not. There were a handful like Rand Paul who were fighting.
Massey was the only one in Congress who was like, you know, if we're going to go ahead and vote on the largest stimulus spending in history, we should at least all show up.
Exactly. They were going to try to get away with that. The largest spending bill in American history with a voice vote. So the people did not know how their representatives voted. He objected to it. He was attacked by Republican leadership. He was attacked by then President Trump. He was attacked by everybody else. But he was right. The people deserve to know how their elected polycritters voted on this huge spending boondoggle. And now, looking back on that, look at the inflation that everybody's fighting everywhere. And they're trying to blame Russia or the Ukraine or anything else. But the fact is, the Federal Reserve's printing money out of thin air to write these checks for all this spending. Because there's no way they could tax us for how much they want to spend. So they just go to the Federal Reserve, who just prints money out of thin air. And suddenly, you know, everybody's freaked out that gas is costing $6 a gallon or heating oil is $8 a gallon. You know, the price of meat's doubled or tripled. Well, yeah, that's called inflation because it's the decrease of value of the dollar. But you're right. I mean, when it comes down to it, most of these critters don't deserve their seats and a lot of their opposition doesn't either. So, you know, it kind of boils down. A lot of times I'll pick up a ballot. I will never vote for the lesser of the two evils. And I'll walk in and I'll pick up a ballot. And a lot of times I just have to return the ballot back because there's nobody there I can vote for and look myself in the mirror the next day. I like to keep my soul. If more voters started doing that and stopped falling for the greatest lie in politics, which is good people are obligated to vote for the lesser of two evils, you're not. That's a lie. Some guys will say, I've known voters say, well, this person's horrible, so I have to vote for that person. I'm like, even though that person's bad too, they've bought into this big lie that you're obligated to vote for the lesser of two evils. You're not. You're absolutely not. That's the biggest lie. It's designed to separate the legislative season and what they do to you and the election season and what you do to them. It was purposely designed that way, and we need to get people over that hurdle.
I've gotten to the point where I just largely believe that voting is the adult version of writing letters to Santa Claus. You know, I mean, they don't feel threatened. And even when people complain, they don't fear them. It's like getting yelled at by your children. It just doesn't scare you. And that's why,
unless
you show up to their church and stuff. I mean, I mean, you've been the number, you can tell a lot about a person by their enemies and the people who have always gone after you publicly. And that's the thing. They used to ignore you because I think they wanted to delegitimize the efforts that you and the organizations you were working with were doing. When they started calling you out by name, cycle after cycle, that's when it's like, damn, he's in their thoughts. He's in their nightmares.
Living rent-free in their head. I hope that one day tyranny looks underneath his bed for me when he goes to sleep at night. You know, but you know, the funny thing is, you know, unless you really mean what you say and do what you mean, I mean, you've got to go out there and hold them accountable. People were so stunned that I took Republicans out in the general election. Too bad. So sad. They're like, but the Democrats won. I'm like, so what? We'll get a real Republican there next time. Who cares? Then we went back in 21. I ran a slate of candidates, and wow, look, suddenly we're getting, you know, decent bills starting to come out of the House of Delegates in Virginia because it's changed. It's no longer the Tidewater aristocracy that it used to be. Now, don't get me wrong. It's still somewhat that way. The Speaker of the House tried to sit in our repeal of red flag bill till I dropped 800,000 calls in the state, and everybody called and screamed at him for standing with Biden and red flag gun grabs. Then suddenly the bill came out of committee. Then suddenly the bill hit the floor. Then suddenly the bill passed. But it was only when we got the people involved. You know, unless you can motivate others, unless you can mobilize them to confront, you're not going to get anything done. And that's what we're going to do this time. Trust me, we're gearing up for the 23 session, and we're going to come out on everything from life issues to gun issues to jab issues to school choice, you name it. We're going for the throat because the 23 legislative session is coming right before the primary season, then the general, right? Because Virginians like to vote every year, so they have off-year elections. We want to expose shine the light on the cockroaches so we can go harvesting come vote time, you know? And I will say, you know, if you're in Virginia, please vote, especially if you get an email from the Virginia Constitutional Conservatives or some of our friends and we say, this scumbag did this, hold them accountable, go out and hold them accountable. We even had, you know, rallies against Jason Meares, who ran for attorney general during the general election, because he had signed on to a red flag gun confiscation bill. Now, of course, since we took out his David Yancey, and I forget his other friend, I forget the guy's name we took out, doesn't matter, another politician, we took out two of his buddies, now he's anti-red flag. He's completely anti-red flag, but we have long memories. If you do something dumb, we're going to remember forever, and we're going to make you pay for it as long as we possibly can.
Chris, we're about out of time, but I think this really gets the message through to people. What other states are you operating in? I know you've got your hand in a lot of different things.
I've got my hand in a handful of things. No, Virginia, doing some work in West Virginia, Louisiana, They have, I mean, I've trained, you know, in Kentucky and in Pennsylvania and Maryland and Texas and I don't know where else, Missouri. I've been kind of across, you know, the great fruited plains of the Republic, you know? And I encourage people, if the Foundation for Applied Conservative has a training in your area, go to it. You will learn more in 8 hours than you will 4 years as a poli-sci major. Right. But then, you know, we have groups like Virginia Gun Rights, Virginia Constitutional Conservatives, Virginia for Educational Freedom, Virginia for Medical Freedom. There's all, and now there's something kind of, we're waiting for the paperwork to approve for West Virginia Constitutional Conservatives. And I hear there may be something in Louisiana happening along the same lines. So we're it was kind of, you know, I kind of hope that politicians are looking at us spreading kind of like they did in Jurassic Park when they realized the velociraptors were breeding. You know, that's kind of what
life, it finds a way.
life finds a way to fight for liberty, right? So, I mean, that's what we're attempting to do. And again, I'm always about, you know, working with other people, getting them into leadership roles, training them, letting them run it. Because again, you know, if you're really trying to fight for liberty, it can't be about you. It's got to be about the cause. And I'm sorry, we didn't lose our liberty in one election, one decade, or one generation. It's going to take that long to get it back. So I'm, you know, my hope is that the work of others and myself and all of us in the liberty bandwagon are working together so that future generations will look back, you know, to, you know, with their current crop of leaders going, hey, those people started it, but we finished it. Because I think it'd probably be my grandchildren, if things continue this way, if we are to restore liberty, who may actually see the Constitution become the law of the land again.
Chris, I'm going to go ahead and include links to Virginia Constitutional Conservatives and all the other organizations that you mentioned, because people, if you have time to bitch on Facebook, you have time to make some angry phone calls and maybe go do some other stuff. Because if you don't make people fear you by the time the election comes, they won't fear you after the results are handed to them. Chris Anders, thank you so much for joining the program.
Hey, thank you, my friend Remzo. Anytime, love being on.